Hello and welcome to the Rise Up Radio.
Bonsoir et bienvenue au Rise Up Radio.
You're talking about Rise Up Radio.
It's incredibly important that people resist what is being done in their name, resist and actually try and change the world.
I think that kind of physical obstruction of BNP activity is very important.
He's been in the hole of the front of the base, screened off. Two lock-ons right in the middle of the main road.
There's all three of us, and welcome to the December show of Rise Up Radio.
Welcome, hi.
So, hello, I'm Tin Man, and the best thing I found this month was a 12-volt mixer, which is what tonight's show is being recorded on.
I'm Pete. I found a little cuddly turtle, but better than that, someone found for me the best scarf in the world, and it gives me an enormous sense of well-being.
I'm Dom, and on Tuesday afternoon, for a brief period, I found a bit of emotional solace. I lost that shortly after, so if you find that, please, you'll keep it for yourselves.
Good stuff. So, just after the last show was put out, we held a Skillshare for the Rise Up project up at the Sumat Centre in Notts, and quite a few people came, and the first piece of tonight's show was recorded at Skillshare by the two latest additions to the Rise Up team, and this is Rocchio and Russell, and I think they're going to take us on a little trip to the local vegan pastry shop just around the corner.
Hi, this is Rocio, and we are here in the Sumat Centre. Well, we will go after learning how to edit and how to interview people, maybe. So we will go now to interview people to the screaming car, and Russell will do his first interview. That's it. I hope you like. If it's something wrong with the things, with the microphone, things like that, remember, it is our first chance.
Hello, we're here at a shop called Screaming Carrot to interview
Andrew Mills.
Andrew Mills,
hi.
Nice to meet you.
Pleased to meet you too.
I don't know very much about your shop. Can you tell us what you sell here?
Right, yeah, we're the core of the business is that we're a vegan bakery, and we manufacture and produce our own range of vegan pasties, wraps, and flans, and some pies and cakes.
Yeah.
But we're also a whole food shop, and sell the usual range of organic and, well, fair trade, and quite a lot at the moment non-organic. Foodstuffs.
Why vegan?
Well, the vegan side means that there's no dairy, meat or meat products or eggs, and we do stick to a strict vegan ethos here, so there's no contamination anywhere in the shop with anything related to animal products. We respond to a small niche market of vegans who live locally and within the city, I suppose the city in the outer suburbs of Nottingham. In response to their requirements, we've been producing pies now for a hell of a long time.
Yes.
4 years with myself, and then the shop goes back another 3 years before that.
Does it?
Yes.
Before?
Screaming Carrot's been the name for about 7 years now.
Yes.
Before that, it was Ginkgo's, I think. I'm not sure. But yes, there's at least three other guises. There's been a cooperative here. Mm-hmm. And some of the original workers also went off to form Lembas, which is a distributor of whole food.
Mm. I've got a question.
Yes.
Okay, if I've got £1.20 in my pocket.
Yes.
Why would I come to the Screaming Carrot to buy a pasty? If I could go to Greg's.
Yes, that's right.
And get two pasties.
That's right. That is the dilemma, I'm afraid, in the modern economic situation that we live in. Our food is obviously hand-produced, It is vegan, so it's, if you like, it's got the authentic ethical basis to it. It's all made from very high quality goods, with materials, ingredients, which try hard to source either organic or local ingredients. And I suppose the quality is what you're paying for. Well, we're very keen on transition here and the concept of transition, which is buying stuff and using local suppliers and local producers to reduce the carbon impact of what we do. And Greggs, of course, is a national organisation and it's a massive setup. And its carbon footprint must be very high. We've introduced a few transition recipes, which we've deliberately chosen to try and fall in with that concept of...
What is transition?
Transition is a concept where people who, if you like, sign up to it or support it, conclude that we're travelling along a journey towards, from peak oil, if you like, transition our society to a situation where we're less dependent on oil. I think they accept that that's going to be a journey, and we need to start from now and move along that journey to a situation where we've reduced our reliance on oil. And so whenever you come to make a decision on something, you look at it and you weigh up the impact in terms of, you know, choosing something which uses less oil or less carbon, produces less carbon, then choose that option rather than going for the high carbon option.
If I wanted to buy a transition food stuff, what would you recommend?
Well, at the moment, the ones we're doing they're mostly based around things like lentils and onions, because we use English onions, and herbs and spices, as I say, can come in bulk. So we're trying to move away from things which aren't transition recipes, which would be like the Thai red pepper, which is using lots of pepper and things which are either grown in greenhouses or being flown in from Spain and places like that. Also, the things with chestnuts, for example, where we can, they can be imported in a bulk form.
Which pasty should I be going for?
Okay,
then
so you would be going for the sun-dried tomato and pie lentil, the spinach and pie lentil, and there's a curried lentil. So those ones at the moment.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Who initiated? What inspired you to do that?
What inspired us to work here?
Yes.
I started my career as an ecologist. I was a keen conservationist working on environmental projects. And then, as usual, I moved into, like most people's careers, move off that path into another aspect of education, if you like. But recently I decided that this was a way of coming back and working on an ethical project, which had, if you like, some connection with the environment, but not necessarily in the conservation field. So that's my inspiration.
Thank you. Well, we are here in the shop and it's really, really good. We'll buy some sugar for us.
Why don't we buy some Zapatista coffee?
Oh yes, that's great.
I think
isn't
we need
it?
That. Yes, Miriel Horizonte, Combatiente Zapatista.
That's $5.59, thank you.
You can come to this shop and they will attend you very, very, the people really, really friendly. I like it. So I'll come here more.
Thank you very much. See you again.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Well, it's good to see new people sending in stuff for the show. And obviously it's a really open project. If you've got anything that you want to put in or any ideas or interviews, then feel free to get in touch with us. We can provide some equipment and a few skills and knowledge we picked up along the way of editing and stuff like that. But yeah, send it in to riseupradio@indymedia.org and or just with requests or even edited files yourself. It seems like a good time to mention as well the forthcoming massive Skillshare that's going on at the Sumac Centre in December. That's on the 6th. It's going to be pretty huge one. It's sort of the culmination of the year's Skillshare project, and there's going to be home efficiency advice, DIY education, bike maintenance and clothing alteration, basket making, all sorts of crazy stuff. There's more information obviously on the veggies diary, and we'll be doing another rundown of what's going on this month a bit later in the show. But for now, I think we'll have a tune by a Nottingham band called the Rebel Soul Collective, and this is Shanty Shake off their MySpace. You can download it from Rupert Murdoch.
Look upon an older man he was. If you take me by the hand and gave it a shake and a glass of rum, we'll laugh and let's make this hour end. Let's make this hour end. Let's make this hour end. Let's make this our end. I know that things ain't like before, cause I know when it lasts, I've seen them all before. That's why the sailors came ashore to find themselves something more. So let's make this our end. 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 Yeah. Changing times, friendly faces, tropical islands. Grill barracuda by the sea, where chanty girls are thrown in for free. So let's make this our end. 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 Things are bound to change, but turtle out remains the same. I know the things ain't like before, but I just don't resent you anymore. So let's make this our end. Let's make this our end. Let's make this our end. And let's make this our end. We'll be right back.
Okay, that was Shanty Shake by Rebel Soul Collective, local Nottingham band. If you're a local band from Nottingham, or you want to come in and do a live session at one of these shows that we record, please get in touch. Again, that email address is riseupradio@ndumedia.org. So don't be shy. Come along and bring your guitar or any other instrument you might play, and voices and singing. But anyway, now we're moving on to... I don't know if any of you have been around the Sumac Yard recently or seen some strange little yellow vehicle sort of silently travelling through the streets. But I noticed it the other day, and what the hell is that, Tom?
I don't know where Tom is, but I'm Tin Man. And the vehicle you're talking about is our latest toy in the sort of the scene. It's an electric flatbed truck, which is... People keep referring to it as a milk float, but it's slightly bigger than a milk float, without the sort of milk float canopy on the back, bright yellow, it looks a bit like
is
a
flat. Is it designed for dairy products?
No, it never has been used to move dairy products around, but it's designed for a heavy goods vehicle, really. It's quite a hefty weight mover.
So whose is it?
It's owned by a collective, a co-op officially, but there's a group of people that have put money on the table, and we collectively bought it. There's about 10 or so of us now, including some groups, the Forest Fields Compost Project that's coming online pretty soon, have put some cash in for it, and the Mischief Makers, another Nottingham collective, and then the Demo Project and lots of individuals associated with that have put money up for it, to use for just moving stuff around.
Just that's what it's going to be used for, sort of like for all these groups to shift stuff about, is that?
Well, that's it. We sort of looked around and realised that a lot of people are moving stuff around Nottingham already using dirty diesel cars that keep chucking out emissions even when they're stopped at the lights. And electric vehicles generally pretty useful for inner city sort of haulage. And we sort of did the figures and realised that lots of people are spending money on man with a van stuff, and they'd rather invest that money in a sort of lump sum to have a vehicle that they knew they could use for one day a month.
So it's a clean vehicle. Has it got any more sort of advantages? I mean, what was it used for originally? Where's it come from?
We bought it on eBay from a company, an engineering firm over in Birmingham, and they used to use it for the last 20 years. They've been just moving sheets of steel and heavy metal around their warehouse. So it was designed for indoor use. It has got a relatively short range, but it's apt for moving all sorts around. It's got a tow bar, and plans to expand it with lots of trailers to move various bits and bobs around the city.
Yeah, so if other people out there are interested in getting involved and using it, yeah, how do they get in touch?
Well, we've got an email address that the group uses, and people can send messages to electric-vehicle@googlegroups.com. I mean, we've already sort of started racking up a fair roster of jobs for it. We're going to be delivering beer from the Nottingham breweries to various pubs around the city, and veg box deliveries from the city farm, and lots of things like that are starting to rack up. But yeah, if people have got Nottingham-specific sort of haulage missions, we are available, and we're able to offer it significantly cheaper than most people. That's the beauty, because it's got relatively low running costs. It's tax and MOT exempt, and the electricity works out about 3 or 4p a mile. But yeah, just get in touch on that email address, which is linked from the Rise Up site.
So what range does it have?
We're currently looking at about a 10-mile range. That's lower than we were led to believe when we bought it, so we are a little bit frustrated by the batteries at the minute. They are limiting us. A lot of the value of electric vehicles is in their batteries, which is a relatively old and heavy lead acid battery bank built into the vehicle, which isn't performing as well as it should have done.
So you're going to modify it?
Well, that's the idea, yeah. We've been pledged lots of batteries from a local bank whose name I won't give for the benefit of sharing, but they've actually said that we can have some batteries for free, and plan is to put them as I say, part of a trailer system to sort of extend the range when it needs more than 10. But to be honest, 10 miles is a hell of a long way, even in a city as big as Nottingham. It can do some really useful work between charges, and it's building up a lot of little homes around the city where it can sit on charge between jobs.
Well, it sounds like it's definitely you know, worth a lot. I've got a question here, basically. It just says, was it worth £2,000, really? But from what you've said and the way it's going to be used, it sounds like it's going to be well worth £2,000 and well worth the environment as well. But
that's it. I mean, it was £2,000, and I personally have been looking into electric vehicles for a long time. I guiltily admit to being part of a milk float enthusiast group on the internet, which I've been dipping in and out of for the past sort of 5 years, looking for a vehicle. And they do come up a lot cheaper than that. You can actually pick up old electric vehicles for the sort of £500 mark. But as I say, the value's in the batteries. This one, we were led to believe, had slightly better batteries, but the whole vehicle had an overhaul 2 years ago, and it's in incredibly good condition. It's been very well looked after. So it's a pretty serious wagon. It can pull a hell of a load. It can carry 5 tons on its flatbed.
It looks pretty cute too.
It's gorgeous, yeah. It's safety yellow with a big flashing light on the top. And she's called Evelyn. If people see her around, give her a hug.
Give her a wave.
No. Well, lyder kjenner de godt, så som bak. Ring, da har han post til deg.
We're going to play another track now. These are a couple of guys called Paul Gill and Sam Belcher, who played at the Sumac on Thursday the 28th. I'm not sure what this song's called, but it's good, so here it is.
Charged my blood, sitting in the road, linking arms and singing and never letting go. When a policeman came and threatened me, off to jail I'd go. I'm guilty of sitting in the road. I'm guilty as charged my blood of having high ideals. But when murder, war and torture, the objects of trade dealing on my doorstep, how do you think a decent man should feel? I'm guilty of having high ideals. I'm guilty as charged, my lord, of sitting up that tree. Obstruction of the sheriff's man, yes, that was me. I had my arm encased in concrete, he had to draw me free. I'm guilty of sitting up that tree. I'm guilty as charged, my lord, of running through the field. You see, I had to help that fox away, or else it would be killed. My dinosaurs and tailored clothes are murdering for thrills. I'm guilty of running through. Law is there for those who make it the tree which they hide, so she can lose the fear that keeps us in our place. I have a different sense of what is right, and I will fight to put a fly to all those injustices we face. Charged my love, dancing all night. I was loved up to the eyeballs, and it felt right. But instead of getting pissed up and it ending in a fight, I was guilty of dancing all night. I'm guilty as charged my love, and thinking I'm what? But this place is sitting empty, and I need somewhere to dust. It's winter and I'm freezing, and you just don't give a toss. I'm guilty of cracking open squats. But I'm guilty as charged, my lord, of digging up the crop. It was genetically modified. It had to stop. It was a corporate conspiracy, a global plot. I'm guilty of digging up the crop. And I'm guilty of conspiracy against the state we're in, where the economy is all that matters, though we're on the brink of ecological catastrophe and all that it will bring. I'm guilty of believing what I see. Anarchist is what I am, what I'm glad to be. Keep me down, you can lock me up, you can throw away the key. But you'll never take my song, my love of life, my sense of wrong. You'll never quench the flame inside of me. Keep me down, you can lock me up, you can throw away the key. But you'll never quench.
earlier this month I was in Bologna to talk to some Bologna people about Bologna things. Obviously in Italy at the moment lots of things are going off with the laws that Berlusconi is trying to pass, in particular the Gemini law, I've probably pronounced that badly, which is suggesting that there should be separate classes for under 10s, those who are born in Italy, those who aren't, that all loans that they have over there are cancelled out, which stops poor students going to the university, and also that school hours for the under 10s cut back to 4 hours a day, which has repercussions on the women's workday because of certain cultural aspects in Italy. But yes, I talked to a lot of people and they're all very interesting, and I feel kind of bad, more so than usual, because the Bologna show is taking a little bit longer. But here is a little rough introduction, which includes a guy called Ferruccio, who knows everything about Italy, and a collective called XM24, who have basically set up a squat, which is the size of the cattle market, and have been there for 8 years, and they're doing lots of really awesome things there.
In Italy, the leftist parties were like, as I told you before, they used to be, especially the Communist Party, they used to be the connecting ground for a lot of people. The Italian Communist Party was the biggest Communist Party in the Western world for ages. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of high level of political activity among people in Italy, higher than probably many of the other European countries, maybe Germany. But Italy was really a really polarized and politicized society. After fascism, especially during the immediate post-war period, the Communist Party was the strongest party, even in places like Sicily. You know, it took a lot of heavy cheating from the mafia and from the church to the Communist Party to lose the 1948 elections in Italy, because it was like everybody expected a hands down victory from the left. Mm-hmm. In those elections in 1948 after the war, because everybody knew that who really fought for the liberation of Italy against the fascists and the Nazis were the communists. I mean, now everybody is trying to appropriate, you know, the myth of Italian resistance, like even those liberal areas, you know, democratic liberal areas, saying that the resistance wasn't a thing of the left, but was shared by, you know, but the truth speaks a different language, because most of the actions were, you know, were carried out by leftist groups, you know, during the resistance, and the only ones who really had the nerve to take arms were the other communist or leftist groups, socialist or communist groups. So everybody expected them to win, but, you know, it was a long campaign to instill fear in, especially in the south and among like very Catholic populations, who were politically they felt themselves as communists, you know, but you know they had this strong Catholic background, so it was easy to create a divide. They said, "Stalin will not be watching you as you put down your vote in the cabin, but God will still be watching you," you know. Okay. And the church blackmailed all their followers by saying that those who would have voted for the communist or leftist cartel, that would have been excommunicati, excommunicated. Yeah. So it was always a false plan from the beginning, you know. There was a movement called Gladio. Gladio is the kind of short sword that the Roman soldiers were carrying. Okay. It was a movement created after the Second World War by the OSS and then it became CIA and the Mafia and elements of the extreme right wing. And the General Masonic Lounge was a nice group of people who basically created the background of sleeping agents. I mean, I'm not saying things that, and this is not conspiracy theory. There are trials, you know. Yeah. There's like acts, you know, in courts and stuff. You know, this is not something that. The strange thing about Italy is that most of the things that in other countries would be like fantasy. Here, you know, it's like the Twilight Zone, you know, people experiment, yeah. And actually, what happened is that this force was like behind the lines waiting for, in fact, it was called Gladio or Stay Behind by the Americans, you know, because if there was always this fear that the Communist Party would take power over here and that Italy would turn to the Eastern Bloc in some way, or at least, you know, sympathize heavily for the Eastern Bloc. So they created this force of armed soldiers, you know, armed sleeping agents who were ready to take power if the Communist Party would have won the elections. So not only there was this, you know, there was this heavy propaganda against anything that was, you know, against the, it was, everything was done to keep Italy in the West, to keep Italy on the side of the Americans. I mean, Italy's got a geographic situation that it's, you know, it's really important, controls the Mediterranean. Mussolini used to say, oh, we don't need porta aerei, like the ships that carry airplanes. Okay. Because we are in a porta aerea, you know, we are, because we are already, you know, because Italy can control, as a geographic population, controls the Mediterranean. The Americans need Italy for political reasons, for economic reasons, and also for military reasons, because we have an enormous amount of NATO bases here. We got a lot of American soldiers here.
I'm sitting here talking to some people from a center in Bologna. If you want to introduce yourselves.
I'm Tiziana. Hello.
I am Tonella.
Hi, Duccio.
So if one of you would like to tell me about this place and what kind of work you've been doing here, and talk a little bit about the history of the place.
So the place we are is called XM24, and is a spazio pubblico autogestito, self-managed public place. So it's like a place in the city that is a bit out of the law. It's a place for youths, but not only for youths. It's a place where we try to give an alternative about the culture, about the politics, about art. And we are there in this place since 2002, so gonna be 6 years. And the activity that we do inside are very, very different. Exactly because what we wanna give with the self-management of this place is a real concrete alternative in several domains. Okay, so that's why we have project like gymnastic room, where you have theater courses, where you have juggling courses, where you have different activity. Then you have a kitchen that make several dinner, cheap dinner, like social, like a moment to be together and to speak with the food, it's really Italian. Then we have a laboratory of picture, photo, where you can also develop yourself your own picture. Then we have a school of Italian for immigrant people. Then we have a laboratory of video making and documentation of what's happened to the city and abroad. InfoShock is the kind of library when you can have a book, you can rent it, you can have information about the radical situation. Then we have a place to play music where the band can try. And what is very important is all the activity that are going on here are completely free, are made from the people in a voluntary way, just to share the knowledge and to give exactly an alternative to the consumistic way of life.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm here on the second weekend in November at the National Radical Roots Gathering, and here in Nottingham, and I'm here with Kath, and she's from the Cornerstone Housing Co-op and Footprint Workers Co-op in Leeds, and she's going to tell us some more. So, what is Radical Roots?
Radical Roots is a network of co-ops of various sorts which are committed to changing society, usually radically. The purpose of the network is to support each other within our businesses and our houses and make sure that our business plans are working, we can borrow money from each other, and so help each other when things are looking economically dodgy, or advise on the best way to fix your roof, or you know, all that kind of stuff, or where to get insurance. But the purpose of the network is that we're providing spaces for people to change society. So the idea is if we can consolidate our bases and provide secure bases, and we've got good activists with less to lose and more energy, and living in a world that the kind of living the lifestyle that they want to live. You know, if you're fighting for a world that's non-hierarchical, where you know everything's organised collectively and resources are shared, then really you want to be living either in a squat or a housing co-op. And we can't help squats, but we can help housing co-ops.
All right. And for people who maybe don't know or don't quite understand it, what is a housing co-op? Or a co-op in general?
Well, a co-op in general basically means people working collectively and no one profiting from anybody else's labour. A housing co-op specifically is where all the people who are tenants are also in control of the company that owns the building. So you're both the landlord and the tenant at the same time. A lot of co-ops, be quite big ones, might have a series of flats or something, and the management committee would be drawn from the tenants, and that would manage the co-op. But within Radical Roots, we pretty much insist that our co-ops don't have management committees, but they're managed by everybody who lives there, so they're usually very small.
So what's the advantage of being a Radical Roots co-op over just a co-op?
The advantage is that you're part of a mutually supportive network, and Radical Roots is one more source of investment if you need a loan. But it's also a big commitment. I mean, the point of Radical Roots is it's doing a lot of outreach work, it's promoting co-ops as a lifestyle. We publish books about how to set up co-ops, workers' co-ops, social centres as well. So we actually demand quite a lot of people from the member co-ops. And it's also everything that is done to make Radical Roots run is done voluntarily by the members. So it's a big commitment, but the advantage is that you are continually inspired by all the other people who are in it, and you have this ready source of advice and help.
How many co-ops across the country are there? Is it wide? Is it 3? Is it 20?
The cooperative movement in the UK is really, really big. There's about 600 housing co-ops in the UK. And there's some really big businesses that are worker co-ops. There's really huge business people will know, like the cooperative societies, which are consumer co-ops. And then there's co-ops in things like social care sector, media. I mean, we're a printing company. There's loads of different kinds of care co-ops and so on. However, I would say that just being in a co-op isn't inherently radical as such. You can't claim that co-ops are inherently radical, but you can say that they are a really good legal structure for people who want to live radically or work radically to choose.
So what happens at a gathering?
Well, like I said, all the business is done voluntarily. It's also done non-hierarchically, so we don't have management committees and radical groups. We do have working groups. Some decisions are delegated, like ongoing work is delegated to working groups. But in order for us to function and for decisions to be made, we meet quarterly. So this was a quarterly business meeting. There would have been decisions about co-ops applying for loans. Various of the other co-ops will have looked through. In fact, everyone will have been sent their business plans, and all the co-ops will have looked through them and looked for flaws and sort of, you know, we want to know about housing benefit levels in your area, that kind of thing. Co-ops choosing to join would be another thing. We talked about whether we want to work more closely with the social centres network. We talked about helping a particular co-op whose business plan doesn't have much in the way of money for maintenance, but it requires everybody else to go and do a load of work for it to work. We talked about possibly organising a big conference on anti-capitalist economics in May. We talked about co-ops internationally. So it's kind of a relatively wide range of things, but all kind of obviously tied together about co-ops and it's about the business of what we do.
You talk about loans. Where does the money for those loans come from?
Radical Roots gets its money from individuals putting it through another body called Rootstock. Rootstock was set up to attract investment specifically to put into Radical Roots, and the investment comes from individuals, from groups, whoever. Most, I would say, of the investors in Rootstock have got £2,000 or £3,000 in, not very much. I really want, and we've got about £300,000, I think, something like that, of investment over the years, but that's how much it currently stands at. Most of that's been lent out to our member co-ops.
And you talk about investment, so does it work like a bank where people put their money in and then they can take it out when they need to, or it just goes in and then just is put forward to help other people?
You have to give a certain amount of notice, so it's right. Like having a long-term savings account but without the really beneficial interest rate. But what you know you are doing is you're enabling these spaces for activism to be created, these kind of and enabling more properties to be taken out of the capitalist system and into common ownership.
Ah, that's fantastic. And what is the connection between Radical Roots and the Sumac Centre?
The Sumac Centre is run as a cooperative, so the company that owns the property is a cooperative, and then there are various groups within that that are members of the cooperative, so the Forestville Social Club, Wild Things Education Collective, Veggies obviously, are all members of the Sumac Centre. Some of them are co-ops themselves, in fact most of them are. And the Sumac Centre is a member of Radical Roots because it has this cooperative structure itself.
Right, and if other people want to find out more or want to think about setting up a powerful co-op in Radical Roots, what can they do about it?
There's a couple of routes. I mean, you can look at our website, which is radicalroots.org.uk. It's roots as in ways of going, not as in things that grow into the ground. You can give us a call. There's usually somebody who's willing to chat. Have a look and see where your nearest co-op is and see if they're happy to come chat to you. On the website there's how to set up a housing co-op, how to set up a workers co-op, ready to download, and instructions to Radical Roots and all that kind of stuff. And there's links to other bodies that can help as well.
Alright, thank you very much. I'll let you get back to your lunch.
Okay, and that last track was Balkan Madness by Astaguka, I think is how you pronounce it. And before that was a bit of audio from Radical Roots Gathering, as you might have gathered. But now we're moving on to...
No, it's the Chase Centre. I think it's Jack is talking to people at Chase Centre. I don't know if he mentions this in the audio, but if you want to volunteer at the Chase Centre, you really should. It's in St. Anne's and you should go there.
Isn't the Chase Centre closing down or something?
They're looking for volunteers. I know the guy who works the kitchen there is off sick this week, so... And he runs it on his own, so obviously they need more help. This is an appalling intro.
Hi there, could you just tell us who you are and what role you have to play here at the Chase Centre?
Hello, I'm Debbie Webster, and I run the Advice Centre, which is a tenant here within the Chase. We give advice on benefit and debt and housing and employment law. I'm also on the board of the CAG, which is a Chase Action Group. And that's my involvement, really, with downstairs, with the CAG downstairs. Yeah, we're totally independent from the Chase itself. We just literally rent space in the building. But we've been part of the Chase, and a lot of our workers were involved in getting the money originally to build the building. So we've got quite a lot of history with the Chase. But yes, we run an advice centre. Our funding is totally separate. And yes, at the moment, we're quite secure.
Now, some people say, and some reports suggest, that the Chase Action Group has been dissolved. Is that actually the case?
No, not at the moment. It's been a very difficult time for the Chase, and it's proving very problematic, really, of how to settle the problems of the past, how we're going to actually settle them now to benefit mainly the workers or the ex-workers, because they've all been made redundant now. So no, it's not dissolved as yet, but we are working closely with other agencies to try and find some sort of the best solution, really.
So what are the problems that you're trying to solve? Can you be any more specific about those?
It's a bit difficult, to be honest, because it's very complicated. The Chase... ran out of funding basically quite a while ago, and there was a very large bid put together by the previous manager which didn't succeed, And basically all of the staff were kept on, even though the funding for a lot of those positions had already finished. But they were kept on in the hope that should the big bid succeed, then everyone would be secure again. So that's how it came about, really. And when the bid didn't succeed, then it was a case of there was no money left, no funding left. And it all happened quite quickly. So it's been very difficult to try and sort it out, and there's a lot more to it than I think anyone would have imagined, certainly than I've imagined. But we are getting advice now from various bodies, so we are hoping to come to some sort of solution, which will hopefully ensure that the workers get the redundancy payments. And we want to get finished, really. We want to draw a line under the past, and we want to start again, because we have got such a fantastic body of local people who are volunteering already and want to get on with new projects and lots of new ideas, and we really want to be looking forward. But at the moment, the small committee that's left is really still tied up with drawing a line under the Chase Action Group.
And so the situation sort of on the ground at the centre at the moment appears to be that it's being maintained and run by volunteers from the community. I'm just wondering what that relationship will be between the people that are sort of trying to keeping things going downstairs and maybe sort of the more kind of upstairs management orientated people who are involved.
It's difficult to say, really, because while CAG is still active, there are no employees anymore. You're quite right. There is only volunteer. Well, there are volunteers, but the directors themselves have to make a decision about whether the company becomes insolvent, whether it becomes dormant, or whether it continues trading. And those decisions have been very difficult to make, because without going into great detail, it is very complicated and there are a lot of issues to be resolved. So at this moment in time, I see that there will be certainly a new group, a new steering group that will sort of look towards the future and may have input from the director. Certainly as the manager for the advice centre, I'd want to keep involved with downstairs. You know, my background is community development. I certainly would love to be part of seeing this centre get back to normal, really, and get projects in and get the local community involved and be part of that. The centre's always remained open. I think that's one of the things that we must really highlight, because a lot of the media, despite us saying the centre is not closing, actually all the headlines was the centre is closing. It was never going to close. The advice centre's been in here since the beginning. We are very much at the heart of this community and we aren't going anywhere. So the centre would have never closed. It would have been run by the advice centre. But we're very, very pleased that volunteers have come in and helped with reception. The cafe itself is also an independent body, and that's remained open. There was never any question of that shutting. So the media put a bit of a false impression, really, out there that we were going to be shuttered up and, you know, windows boarded up, and that was never going to be the case. This building belongs to the local community, and it was there was a big campaign to get the money through City Challenge. There was a lot of community involvement during the building and the construction and the design. It belongs to the community, and that's the way it will go forward. You know, I'm hoping that the people that's involved now will stay and be part of rebuilding the centre.
Hiya, can you tell me what are your names and what are you doing here today at the Chase Centre in St Anne's?
Well, this is really easy because we're both Debbie. We work for a company called TNG, which is a national training provider, and we're here today working in conjunction with Unity in the Community, which is the new forming group of volunteers. We're hoping to promote volunteering, and within that we are able to find funding to actually qualify those volunteers in various different occupational areas. So it's a bit of a carrot and stick, and hopefully beneficial both to the Chase and to TNG as a company.
Just briefly, just tell us what kind of qualifications a volunteer might be able to undertake?
Well, obviously, if they're working on the administration side, then we do the business administration for level 2 or level 3. We also do customer service, so if they're interacting with the people that come in, obviously, and use the centre, then customer service would be a good one for that. We're also doing team leading. So if they're going to have a group of volunteers that they're working with and coordinating with, then the team leading qualification would be ideal. And we've also got some of the volunteers that's going to be doing the childcare, when the childcare, the playgroup centre and the after-school club is up and running. So it'll give them a formal qualification to put them at a level, obviously, where they're going to reach the level 2 that's required by legislation.
So our assessors will come to the learners, to the candidates, and actually look at what they do and assess them as competent. They'll also deliver the knowledge element of the qualification to them in the workplace, so they are here at home, they don't have to leave children and go off to, you know, college.
Much interest today?
Yeah, quite a lot, actually. And there's also been people, obviously, that's come in that's found a little bit more about the community centre itself, and they've actually organised becoming a volunteer as well. So I think it's worked both ways, really, for us as a provider, and, you know, to being able to support the community and the qualifications, but also for the community centre as well, to sort of get additional support that they need to, you know, to keep the community centre open, really.
Right, so could you just introduce yourself for us?
Yes, my name's Emma Leyland and I'm a volunteer down at the Chase Neighbourhood Centre.
All right, and so there's been some reports in the press over the last 6 or 8 weeks about happenings here at the Chase, even rumours about a closure. But can you sort of give us your take on what's happened at the Chase and what's happening now?
I can certainly try. From my understanding, unfortunately, the Chase Action Group that runs the Chase Neighbourhood Centre has unfortunately dissolved at the moment. I think this was due to bad management, poor decision making, which inevitably ended up in the closure of the Chase Action Group. The building itself, though, however, belongs to the community. And if we want this building to be kept open, then we have to come and try and do as much volunteering as we possibly can, because, you know, run by the people for the people. We're not willing to let this place go down. It's opened an awful lot of people's lives, this place, mine included, and I'm not willing personally, and nor are my other colleagues, to let this place go down. And we will fight tooth and nail and all the hours God sends if needs be, just to try and keep it open. It's for the community, by the community, and whatever anybody wants to do here, we will try our hardest to get up and running and do it for them. Our hearts are all in the right place. We're very passionate about this and we just want it to succeed. Pop in, come and talk to us, come and see us. Any skills, any advice, any hours, anything that they can offer, everything is most greatly appreciated. What
So that was a tune by Mutex, local dubstep producer living in Forest Fields. And there's a link to his tunes on the playlist for this month's show, which is available on the Rise Up Radio website. She's got a new domain. We are now officially at riseupradio.org.uk. Okay, so we're going to go back to some of the content recorded again at the Skillshare. This is a Rokio recording, an interview with Pete Morris, a local film producer, about the Ready Steady Skip project, which had its premiere in the Sumac Centre last month, and will seamlessly blend into some audio recorded by Eva at that event.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well.
And can you tell me your name, please?
Yeah, I'm Pete.
Yes. Why are you here? Can you tell me your interests?
I'm here because I'm interested in Rise Up Radio. I've been involved with it a little bit since it started, and I haven't been as involved with the this Skillshare as much as I'd like to have been. But I'm here now to offer my help to anyone that wants to know anything about recording, editing, or well, actually, that's probably about as far as my skills go, really.
Yeah, and tell me, do you know, do you use any program for editing, or do you want to learn about that?
I've used a program called Audacity, which is a free program that you can download off the web, which I'd recommend to anyone because it's very easy to use. But I've also used a program called Adobe Audition, which is like Audacity, but it's a few more bells and whistles.
That's interesting. And now, have you recorded podcasts or something like that, or just, you know, you just for doing in your house? Or?
I've gone out and I've created a few podcasts myself for my day job, because at my day job I work at a homeless charity, so I've done some podcasts for them around homelessness. And I've done some recording like you're doing now. I've gone out and recorded events and spoken to people at protests and all sorts of things to create content for the radio show.
Doing a little bit of anyway. How did you know about this? About this meeting.
I was supposed to come to some of the meetings, so I'm sort of involved a little bit with the radio station. So, well, the radio show. So I heard about it from that, really.
Did you know? Did you listen to the podcast?
The latest one. Or I think so, yeah. I listened to the last show, but they've just edited the new one, so I haven't heard that yet.
All right. And do you have an idea for the programs to do here?
No. I really haven't got a clue, I'm afraid, actually. I've been very busy working on a film called Ready, Steady, Skip, which is like Ready, Steady, Cook. But it's about instead of food bought from a shop, it's food that people have collected from bins, from skips that supermarkets have thrown away. So I've been very busy working on that. So I haven't been as involved with the radio as I'd like to have been for the past month. But I finished that yesterday, so now I'm all radio.
But now if you want to do a podcast for this...
What would I do it on? I think I'd have to do it with what I'm fresh is in my mind. So I guess food skipping and the amount of food waste that's being chucked out by supermarkets. It's not just the mouldy food waste. It's like food that's good to eat, like fresh veg and stuff. And I think I'm a bit passionate about highlighting that as a bit of a problem, because I don't see why supermarkets or any, it's not even supermarkets, just any kind of shop, is throwing away so much fresh produce.
That's really great.
Yeah, especially considering the current food crisis.
Really, really great. Thank you for your time, and take care. God bless you.
Bye. Wonderful. Thank you for the wonderful interview. Cheers.
We're here at the official premiere of Ready, Steady, Skip. Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Yeah?
I'm very, very excited.
Well, you know, what are you hoping the response will be this evening?
I hope that it's going to be people are going to enjoy it, going to have loads of fun, and that I think that we should all feel quite proud as well, because we actually managed to do something which is a proper professional, something that comes across as being a proper professional piece of work, but we're doing it for our own reasons and on no one else's terms, and I think that's really important.
Wait, are you excited?
I'm absolutely riveted.
Yeah? What are you riveted about?
Well, it's the premiere of Ready, Steady, Skip tonight. and I just can't wait to see what it looks like.
Obviously, I haven't seen it yet, but what can we expect?
Well, you know, there's it's a 30-minute film. It's a spoof of Ready, Steady, Cook, and we all go around. And, you know, I learned a lot about how much food supermarkets really waste, basically. Yeah.
What are you eating?
Duck balls.
Where do they come from?
They're from the back of a Tesco, Skip. They're basically muffins and...
So you've been converted then?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm quite into Skip food, yeah. It's free, it's fun, it's fantastic.
Hi! My name's... No, we made a film, it was great. It's called Ready, Steady, Skip. You're all going to love it, I think. It's about food.
Wastage.
It's a spoof of Ready, Steady, Cook, so if you've seen that, it'll be extra amusing. It's taken us like 6 months to edit it. We had a lot of fun doing it. And why did we make it? We made it because we had this idea that we should do like a TV programme about skipping, and it'd be called Ready, Steady, Skip, and everyone would like... go around and get food and make it happen. And we did it, and it was really exciting. Like, everyone did it for the right reasons. People loved doing it. It was filmed. Everything was skipped in the film, apart from we had to buy one, like, electric hob to get the second kitchen.
Dave's made us a website.
Oh, yeah, that's the point. That's why it's here. So all you kids will live in, like, social centres and community centres and all this. It's basically online, and we want you to show it. It'll be a downloadable poster. Show it in your social centres. Show it to people. We want people to see it.
And tell your friends, because they can watch it free, stream it off the website, I believe.
And open a bit of debate and stuff. The website, there's a lot of information on there, but there's always room for more.
So you watched it, and then you're a bit sick of it. How do you think the premiere went?
I think it went down extremely well, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The feeling's good. It feels good in here.
It feels very good in here. I feel a bit overwhelmed by the excitement of it all.
It was just the most amazing thing to do. It was very fun. I had the best weekend of my year, possibly. And it does get the message across. But obviously, seeing yourself on camera is really quite mortifying.
How did it make you feel watching it?
I don't know. Full of pride. It was amazing.
Why did it make you feel pride?
People wanting to get together and actually to make something that actually means something in sort of cinematic form, which is quite rare. Like, it's just a work of art that actually has something to say rather than just entertain.
Okay, we just watched Ready, Steady, Skip thing. I'm just walking off on my own because I can't say it in front of people. It was really exciting to watch it in front of a live audience. It was really great to see people genuinely laughing. And some of the lines we sweated over were lost in reels of laughter, which was exciting. But then, as well as that, it was really positive to show it to a group of people that understood what we're talking about, that recognised the excitement of finding these things and the unbelievable shock of what the companies actually get away with throwing away on such a regular basis. There's a lot of things we didn't cover in the film. We didn't talk about how far the food had come. Like, a lot of these, you know, green beans from Kenya and cherries from South America, and everything's just travelled so far and used so much expense to be made, and then it's just absolutely just tossed away without a care. These kiwis that we see in the film, we couldn't even eat those. It was nearly 2 weeks after we'd finished filming that we had to eat those kiwis because they just weren't ripe, but the sticker said they were gone, and so they were thrown away. Everything about it, the whole kitchen was skipped, everything we made, everything we found, the sets, the props, it was all just made out of things that we found lying around in the street, and it's really good to finally have a finished product and something that people can watch and we can show it to the rest of the world. And it's online, it's live now, and really excited about it.
www.readysteadyskip.org.uk. I'm outside the Sumac now, just having a cigarette after the premiere of Ready, Steady, Skip, and I'm going to ask you some opinions about the film. Hi, did you watch the film?
No, I didn't. I missed it.
what did you think of it?
I thought it was fantastic.
Brendan, did anyone see the film?
We saw the film.
I saw the film, yes. Okay, yes. Well, I saw the film. I thought it was very entertaining.
Yeah. Entertaining. And did it raise any issues that you might have thought about food waste?
Yeah, I'd just like to know where that fruit skip is.
Ah,
I'm intrigued with that one.
Well, that guy actually went out of business. He threw away too much food, seriously. Well, he went out of business.
That's his own fault.
Exactly.
Point proven.
Yeah. So next time you're passing a bin, do you think you'll have a sneaky peek inside?
Bargain booze, maybe.
Yeah.
I saw something the other day. They got something out of a bottle of champagne out of a Waitrose bin.
Yeah. Really? A bottle of champagne?
Yeah, yeah. One bottle. But,
did he celebrate on the spot?
Well, it wasn't me, it was a friend, but he hogged it to himself and we'll share it around.
But you're a regular skipper. How do you think that reflected what it is really like to actually go out skipping in Nottingham?
In the last year, skipping's evolved. So when they were saying, look what we found, recently we've been finding a lot more. And like it seemed almost a bit amateur skipping.
Right, shit, so they're throwing away a lot more stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The other day we came back with enough. Well, Ben came back with enough to fill the kitchen. And it's gone from being hilarious to a bit scary.
Scary?
Yeah, it's just.
There's a big credit crunch on. Why throwing away so much stuff that's perfectly fine? We found DVDs. Most of the Ready Steady Skip DVDs have been burnt on DVDs that were found in a skip.
Not good, is it?
Not really.
Over the summer.
Things that don't go off, you shouldn't really be throwing away. You should be offering it out to somebody that might be able to make use of it.
But they can't do that, though, can they? Because it's against the law and it's not...
Drink it. We've got to clean it.
It's not economical, is it? It's not economical for them.
It's not economical. It's against the economy of the scale.
Yeah, yeah.
They've created so much shit that they'd have to hide it away.
What bites me is that you pull these things out of bin and go, yes, we've got blueberries. Wait a minute, where are blueberries from? They're in America. Right, fair enough.
Okay.
Right, we've got dates. Where are they from? They're from Egypt. Right, we've got these Brussels sprouts. Wait a minute, you can grow Brussels sprouts. No, they're from Israel.
No.
Right,
no.
Let's get them from Israel. Why do we get them from Israel? It's nice, but I think it's temporary, and like we've all come to rely on skip food loads, and if it suddenly gets cut, I think we'd all be fucked.
Yeah.
And like we need to move away from skipping's lovely, but we need to move away from it to self-sufficiency of growing. Like if we spent as much time skipping as we did planting and growing and nurturing, we'd be pretty sorted now. I think we should document it, and what we've done is absolutely perfect to do this, because we'll look back and we'll go like, you remember the days of GAC? GAC, like bags of GAC and bags of food, because it's going to get to the point where it's going to be, right, our supermarkets are fucked because we can't afford the supply chains, or we can't afford the whole economy's fucked. It's all going to go around, like, people have been spending too much shit. Too much on shit that it's going to come down to the fact that
they're going to be enveloped in shit.
There's going to be a big envelope. An envelope.
Oh, no, it's really cool. I'm emailing it to all my family tomorrow. I've already told my dad about it.
It's like it's a properly digestible format, like, for anyone to watch.
Digest and masticate.
Move forward.
Do you know what I mean? It's totally the sort of thing that like my dad's going to be into, because.
Yeah, anyone who missed the premiere tonight, they can download it. What's that website again?
It's www.readysayskip.org.uk.
That's www.readysayskip.org.uk.
Hey!
Yeah, so that was a live track from Bendigo DC, who played at the Sumac recently. They're a brand new band, just formed, a sort of combination of heavy metal and political songs, I think, but in a jokey way. But if you're a new band and you want to start out in a sort of a gig environment and you want to get in contact with the Entertainment Collective at the Sumac, which they've got an email address.
Entertainment Collective. At lists.riseup.net.
And even better than that, or not as better, but equal to, is to come and do a live show here with us. Be our live band in the studio. It's very exciting.
Yeah, we haven't had a live band this show, which is, we like having live bands.
We do. Other things you should be doing, and if you're not, you should be ashamed of yourselves, is listening to our dear friends at London Dissidents. Obviously, listen to them after us, not instead of us. But they have lots of really good things, and you can listen to them at www.dissidentisland.org. And they're really good. Apparently, they have like lectures as well. They like record lectures from universities and play them.
They've been going for a little bit longer than us, but you know, don't think they sound more professional than us.
Although they are. Other than that, if there's anything going on in your local area at the moment that you think is worthwhile reporting, it could be anything really. Anything you think should be covered in the media and isn't. Come and tell us about it, or even better, go and record an interview with someone involved in it yourself, and just send it to us and we'll play that. There are other things that are going on, including Winter Wonderland on the December the 14th.
14th, yeah.
Which is a crafts fair, and it's a crafts fair, so lots of people have made really cool stuff, and you can buy that stuff and give it to Christmas presents, because you don't want to buy that really boring stuff from...
Handmade things,
yeah.
Made by local people for, you know, people that aren't maybe so local. But also, as well on that day, on December the 14th, there's going to be live music and DJ. So it's going to be an amazing day of just wonderful crafts, lots of happy, wonderful people, mulled wine. In fact, I think they're going to have hot cider. Is it hot cider? Warm cider. Come along. It'll be fun.
And a week before that, at the Refugee Forum, we're going to have Creating Harmony. Which isn't as bad as it sounds. It's going to be lots of really great music, lots of great food. Come along, enjoy the music, enjoy the food, enjoy good times, good people.
And if you're hungover on Sunday the 7th and you're looking for a bit of food, come along to the Sumac for the Sunday vegan brunch, 12 till 3. Yeah, don't miss it out. It's yummy.
And yeah, on Saturday the 13th of December, there's... Vegan Food Festival going on in the, it's in the Old Market Square. It's actually in the council house. It's an opportunity to go inside the really beautiful building that they don't normally let you in and go and hang out in a really nice big hall and look out over all the plebs on the square on the ice rink. And you get loads of free vegan snacks and you can buy some chutney for Christmas and stuff like that.
And last but not least, by no means least, on Saturday the 13th, if you're up for a boogie, there's a big Northern Soul night on at the Sumac. DJ Merrick is going to be spinning some classic tunes, some unheard of tunes, and some just amazing Northern Soul sort of Motown stuff that you might never heard of, but they're all going to get you up and dancing. So come down Saturday the 13th, Sumac, from about 8.
And if you're still dancing, by come 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, there'll be a brunch served at the Sumac, which you should eat as well. But I think that's all we've got time for plug-in wise. It's been a very interesting show. There's almost nothing else to say apart from, oh, there's one more recipe. Because, of course, it's Christmas. It's the season to be jolly. It's the season to eat in a moderate amount because you don't want to take all the food. And one of our esteemed colleagues has shared a recipe with us. It's actually too far away for me to read. Animals. I really can't see it.
I don't mind reading. Okay, so to finish off the show, because it is Christmas after all, I'm surprised if you're not listening to this on Christmas Day, because I know I will be. You should listen to it before, because we've got a fabulous recipe for you now. If you're at home and there's a bit of pressure, you know, mum's put a turkey on the table and all that, and you're like, well, mum, I don't eat chickens or animals for that matter. Well, here's a tasty meal that you can make with no animal products in whatsoever. It's called hummus and roasted vegetables or gravy. Now, hummus is usually made with chickpeas, but it was recently discovered by a good friend of ours that you can supplement them with almost any bean. So for variations on the classic, so butter bean hummus is definitely a favourite. So here we go. Chickpeas or other bean, i.e. butter beans, give it a go. 2 cupfuls. Okay, I hope you've got a pen now. You've got to write this down. Lemon juice, fresh, or 1 to 2 lemons, depending on how zingy you like it. You should always put, you know, too much lemon juice in as much as you can, really, because you want it to be a bit zesty. Garlic, 4 or 5 cloves. Tahini, 2 large tablespoons. And olive oil, 2 large tablespoons. Here's how you make it. Just blend it all together. Sometimes you can just mash it up with a fork to vary the texture, give it a bit of a rough texture. If the mixture feels too dry, just add a little bit of water by the tablespoonful at a time and add salt and pepper to taste. The more salt you add, the more likely it is to taste like the hummus you get from the shops. But this recipe can also be adapted into an amazing aubergine dip if the chickpeas or whatever beans you're using are instead replaced with baked aubergine. Try that out. And then to go with it, you want some gravy. So to make your own, it can only be better than the stuff you buy from the shops, obviously. The basic principle is to fry the flour in oil and make it into a paste before slowly adding your liquid, stirring the flour in as you go. Voila, no lumpy gravy, apparently. I've never not had lumpy gravy, but let's go. Okay, ingredients. 1 onion, medium handful of flour, tamari or soy sauce, 3/4 litres of stock or veg water. You can also just use boiled water from the kettle. It just means you'll have to add more salt and flavour, but it's no biggie. Salt and pepper to taste again. To make it, always start by slightly frying the onion, chopped however you like it, then gently mix in the flour. You may need to add a little more oil. I would usually stir it for about 30 seconds once it's in a paste. But before adding the 3 splashes of the tamari, now slowly stir in the stock, making sure you stir out any lumps. Bring it to the boil and then leave it without the lid on to simmer. The longer you leave it, the thicker it will be. Remember to keep tasting it as you go. There are no rules with flavouring, really. I sometimes add a little splash or two of balsamic vinegar, or possibly instead of tamari, to add a large slurp, or could even add a large slurp of red wine. Finally, roasted vegetables. Although delicious, don't always sound that exciting. But why not try experimenting with how you do it and what you roast them with? You could try roasting the potatoes with olive oil, onions with rosemary, while putting parsnips and carrots with seeds, nuts, lemon and garlic. Also, it's not only root vegetables that roast, courgettes, marrows, peppers, you name it, you can probably roast it. Okay, and to finish, why not try some lightly steamed green vegetables or even salad with a seedy mustard vinaigrette? That sounds delicious.
Tim Mann's got a little bit of a tip on roasting as well. It really frustrates me whenever I see people trying to roast vegetables in overloaded roasting tins. Something will only roast if it's actually touching the bottom of the tin and it's got a bit of space around it for the oil to lap up around it. So just don't try and cram loads of veg into a roasting tin. Just do 2 tins of roasted veg and like spread them out so they've got plenty of space, and then shake them every sort of 20 minutes to make sure the oil's covering them completely. It, as I say, really frustrates me when people basically just steam veg in the oven. When they open the door, there's a massive cloud of steam that comes out. That's because you've got overloaded veg trays.
In case you weren't too quick on the pen for that, we'll put that recipe on the website, www.riseupradio.org.uk. Merry Christmas, everybody!
Happy Hanukkah!